Hello, everyone who is left. just to know, is everyone sitting here for the Pure Data workshop? Just to be sure. Okay. If you want, you can also come closer, but you can also stay away. It's fine. just to know, from the people here, who is a Pure Data user? Who is experienced with Pure Data? Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Okay. And who has some experience with data structures already? Just for me to know, so that okay.
Good.
Okay, I have here just a second. So. Don't pay attention to the Windows computer. So, I have the materials for the workshop in this link if you want to download them, or also have them in this USB stick if you want to try them out while the workshop is running. The patches for the workshop. So that you can try them out while we go through this. Look for if you're using the stick. Look for this for the file called. Just a second. Okay, more people. Good. So yeah, I'll just repeat. There are the patches for this workshop. You can get them either here in this link, or in the blue USB stick that is circling around. It's the same. Exactly. You can choose wherever you like. Okay. No one wants it then. Then I'll take it back. I would advise you for the workshop to install the latest version of Pure Data Vanilla, which is 041A1, this one here, because some of the features are only possible in this version. Per data, most of the features are possible there, and some other features are only possible in per data anyway. It's fine. You get most of the workshop with any other version anyway. But okay. Since there are more people here, I'm just going to ask the question again. Who from here is not a Pure Data user? Just for me to know. Okay, good. Yeah. And who from here has already worked with data structures before? Okay, just 2.5 people or something like that. Good, good. Okay. So I would. Okay. Careful. Yeah, very good. I would prefer if you to wait a bit until everyone has the patches and the Pure Data installed, because it will be much more. I think it will be much more productive for you if you can try out the patches while we go along with it. Otherwise, it will be just a boring theory session. Sorry, what did you ask? Yeah, of course. Yep. It's this one here. If you're interested in materials for the workshop that I gave yesterday, they're also here. You can also get them. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you probably might see better from this side. I think you probably might see better from this side. There will be lots of patches on the corner there. Or just a bit more to the middle. Yeah, go ahead. There's this one here as well. It's also free. Good, so who is already ready and set to go? Okay. You can then start by opening the first patch, which is called Data S00, which is this one here. Okay. Just know it's... Who is still getting ready? Just for me to know. Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a second. Just have a look. I'll address this right now. So, if you already opened this patch, you might have one error or another. It's maybe important also. You should also install these libraries here. These three ones. They're important for the patches today. So if you want, get them through Deacon by going to help, find externals, and install these libraries. I trust everyone knows how to use Deacon, but I can also explain that. And theoretically, if I did my homework, when you reopen the patch, you won't have any mistakes. Good. Can I start then, just to be sure? Is there enough people saying yes? Okay, then I'll start with the workshop. Okay, so this workshop is an introduction to data structures, and it also describes a way on how to work with them. Some of the latest, this workshop was already given in the Pure Data Conference some years ago in Weimar, but now has been updated to the latest developments in Pure Data and also in Vanilla, which has a couple of new features that didn't exist some versions ago. So it is also here mentioned. This is done for these two versions of the programs. It can be that in the very near future, new features are going to be available that are not here yet. So that can happen anytime. It only depends on the goodwill and time of Miller Bucket and Jonathan Wilkes, among others. Good. This patch, this first patch, is basically an index for the whole workshop. If you click in any of these buttons here, of this vertical radio button, you'll open the patch concerning to it. So basically, if you want to open a chapter, you just click on one of the buttons here, and if the externals are working, you'll get there immediately. Mm-hmm. So let's start first then with some theory. Okay, so since I imagine most of you have a computing background, I don't. You know much better than me what is a data structure anyway. It's just a way of organizing data as far as I can explain it. In an article from Miller Puckett in 2002, he mentions that actually data structures was the original idea to start developing PD. That it was a feature that differentiated from Max back then. so that he could use mainly computer music scores and have a user-definable graphical representation for data that he could also manipulate in real time. Here, the thing is that this feature itself, or this library, this group of objects, has never really caught on among the PD users. If you speak with most users, it's a kind of exotic section that not that many people know, because it's a bit, it's still a bit underdeveloped, and it's very hard to get it to use compared with other kinds of patching. So you have to, you'll see later more in detail, you have to just to store the information and get information, manipulate the information, you have to do lots of extra steps that you usually in other patching with other graphical GUIs or something you don't need to do. So that that has been put off some users a bit. Also the fact that there weren't that many tutorials or instructions on how to start with work on this. It also made it a bit hard for people to really grab onto this. But it's a very powerful feature. So, good. If you're interested in looking better at the references, these blue things are PDDP links, so it will guide you to the original web links here. So basically, I'll just, here is, just, I'm not going to open my web browser now, but just to show you, this will guide you on to the link online when you click on it. So I'll leave that. I'll leave the more theory for another time. I think you'll see enough. So about the objects that exist, notice that when I when you open this second patch, unless if you open it in per data, you'll get these mistakes, because these are new objects that only exist in per data. So there are basically three categories for data structures objects. One is how to set your data templates, how to access them. And the newest category, which is specifically only to per data, is related to SVG rendering of images and shapes, which is quite new and very exciting as well. So here is a small list of these objects. We're going to go through all of them during the tutorial anyway, looking at practical examples. This is just a kind of reference. So to define your structures, there's the object struct. To draw graphics, you have these four objects. Draw either curves or field curves or polygons or field polygons. To draw other variables, you can use draw number, symbol, or text. And to plot an array, use the object plot. To access data, you can have the objects append and pointer to append to add scalar to a list, and pointer to get the location or the reference for that scalar. To get and set variables, you use the get and set objects. To edit arrays, you have these three objects as well. And these are the new objects that Miller Puppet has developed in the last two or three versions of PD that can deal with arrays and texts. And these are a couple of objects that are mentioned somewhere, but there's really not a documentation for it, and probably they're just there kind of half finished, and maybe they'll be finished at some point, so don't use these yet. And the stuff about the per data, these are objects that can draw shapes, either SVG shapes, or then arrays, or sprites, or other things. Maybe we can have a look at it. I don't know if I couldn't be here yesterday for the talk about per data. I don't know if this was mentioned. Okay, good. So it's a very interesting field. Might take a while until it gets onto PD vanilla. We don't know. We'll have to see. Okay, so let's start to get a bit more practical. One detail about all the patches and stuff. At any time, feel free to interrupt me and ask any questions, or if there's something I said that you don't understand. So, now starting with the programming. Data structures are a bit different than normal PD patching, where you can just open a canvas and then start putting your objects, etc., etc. doesn't matter. PD structure, data structures have a kind of abstract element that sometimes confuses the PD users because they're used to the visual data flow representation of the program. But the data structures, they store elements in memory, so in an invisible space, so to say. And that is for PD users at first a bit confusing. Because for many of them, the reason why they started using PD is because they see all the information there. So this is a bit against their first instinct. But usually, to work with data structures, you should think maybe at beginning on three different areas sub-patch areas to work on them so that your structure will work. You don't have to do it like this, but this is a way maybe at first to get a bit more structured work and get into the kind of development that you want to do. So first you need a sub-patch where you put your structure template. These patches are now empty, but the next example will have some content for you to have a look at. You need a patch where you can put your graphical representation, which are called scalars in pure data language. And you need a place where you do your programming. So where do you get your data, you manipulate your data, and then you save it again. As I say here, you don't need to separate all these places, but it might help you at first until you get experienced with it enough. The only thing that is really obligatory is that when you declare a template, so this part here, you can only declare one template per subpatch. So for example, you can't have here two different or more than one template declared. That's a limitation of PD. I'm going to jump this section now. This is just a practical session then on how to control the graphical patch. I'm just going to jump it now and then we'll come back to it. This is not vital for data structures. It's just something that you'll need sooner or later. So if you want, you can go to the My First Structure patch. Just to know, is everyone now already following? Are all the patches opening without errors and everything? Okay, cool. Good. So this is My First Structure. Yeah, it's my personality, so to say. They don't have to be like that to work, anyway. They don't work better just because they look better. Okay, so now here we have the same three sections, and now with a structure. So if we go here to the structure patch, you'll see some content. I'm going to go into the details later. If you go to the programming patch, you also see some more content. And if you see the graphic patch, you'll see that it's empty. So let's maybe now go to the programming patch, the one in the middle, and follow these three steps here. So first, click here in this message box, then in the bang, and then you can click here in the 13, or you can input a number. You'll see that a new object appears here in the graphic subpatch. It's important that you follow these three steps. Okay. Did that work for everyone? Sorry? It's written here in the patch. So number one, number two, and number three. I'm going to explain now what happens, but I just wanted you to do it first so that you can see something. Good. So what happened is that you just created a scalar, which is this object here. So scalar is basically a graphical element. It's actually an element. Doesn't need to have a graphic, but it helps where the data is stored. So for example, if you go here and click on, with the right button, click on properties, you see here the data properties from this scalar. You can close it now. We'll come back to it when I go back to explain the template. Okay. Good. To create a scalar, there are a couple. So now we begin with the work that is a bit more complex than usual. So you see already here with these three steps, there's already a bit more work just to create an object and just to create a new object and say, new object or something. So thing is that it's important to have these two objects working together to create scalars. So things that to create, that's why I was saying you need a graphic, a canvas to place your graphical elements, your scalars. To make this work, you need a pointer object, and you need two types of instructions. First, you need to traverse the canvas, which in pure data language means to access this canvas here. So as you might know, in order to refer to a subpatch, use the flag PD minus. Since this subpatch is called graphic, you call it traverse PD minus graphic. If this subpatch will be called graphic 1, then I would have to call it graphic 1 here, for example. Then first you make the pointer traverse the painting area, which then accesses the area, and then send it to bank so that it goes to the beginning of the list of scalars, which previously there was none because it was empty. And then what it does, when I'm going to repeat the operation, it sends a bank. You saw the bank being sent. Actually, sorry, it didn't send a bank. It did. I'm going to show you again what it does. So the pointer traverses the subpatch. When I send the bank, it sends a G pointer reference, which I myself cannot explain what's inside because I actually don't know how to program anything else except pure data. But lots of people here will be able to tell you what's happening inside of it. This G pointer is basically the pointer reference for the scalar, for the start of the list of scalars that is in this subpatch. So, and this pointer goes now to the right side of the append object. What this append object does is to refer to the struct 1 template, which we're going to see right away what is comprised of, and declaring these three fields, X, Y, and F. And these were then, so what happened when you clicked here, or if you click also here, or if you click here, is that then you're sending a list of three elements that corresponds to these three elements here. I can also just send, if I want, I can also just, for example, improvise here and send just one element. What it did is now to, well, it basically clapped the other two numbers that had already been declared in the previous object and just sent another value for the x. So what happened is that it created a new scalar with the coordinates x and y and the float f. The float, the x and y, I think, are self-explanatory. Those are the coordinates. And the float f is the number that is seen here right away. I'm going to... Okay. Good. And now if we go back to the... This was more the practical side. Now we can have a look at the theory behind it. If you go, just as is everyone following? I'll take that as an yes. But if you go now to the structure side of it, to this subpatch here. So now you see here the declaration of the template. Good. And for that we use the object struct. So what does is that you can see more details about the these objects in their help files, because I'm not using all the features. There are also other flags that you can use. The struct object declares then a kind of data structure. For that, you give it a name, which has to be unique. You can't have two templates with the same name. And then after that, basically, you just declare variables. In this case, we see we have the float x is declared, the float y, the float f, the symbol simp, then the text called list. So you have first, after the structure name, you have just pairs of parameters, where the first one is always the type of a parameter, and the second is the name of that variable. Just to say, the parameters, the variables x and y are predefined in PD. So they're used for the coordinates, and you can't use it for anything else. So that means You can even not declare the X and Y, they'll always be there, because the scalars always need a place to be in the canvas. Good. And then here you see the other types of elements X exist. So basically, there's only three types of elements to declare, which is either float, a symbol, or a text. A text is a list, actually. Only Miller Packet decided to name it text instead of list, just for fun. No, there was a reason for it or something. I think he didn't want to call it list because then it doesn't have the same features. He explained it once in a mail, but I forgot what was the exact description. Good. But then maybe we can have a look at now at one of the scalars. So go to any scalar and have a look at the properties of that scalar. And then you'll see how it reflects the structure that we just seen. So the content of this properties window is usually very similar. You have the first line, which is just data, declaration of the template name, which is struct 1, the same as here. And then you have the list of the variables that were declared. So in that case, you have 5, the 3 floats, the symbol, and the list. And then you have some semicolons. And then you have the content of that scalar, which in this case is the name of the template, and then just whatever content is there now. So here we see this scalar has the X value of 13, Y value of 13, the float value of 13, and the symbol, there was no real content, so it's just called symbol. You can also see you have here the send and done buttons. If you want, you can change the values here, actually. And then you can send it. And you see now the scalar has changed. For example, if I change here to 23, the scalar goes to the left, to the right, sorry. If I change here 132, it will go down because I just changed the Y field. If I change everything back to 13, then it goes back to the previous place. And in the same way, I can also change the symbol. I can also change this value here. Of course, this is it will be a bit time-consuming to always work with this. In the real world, no user is going to use this window anyway like this. But it's just to know that where you can find information, and in some particular cases where you can change it as well. When you're finished, you can just do Control D, and the window is gone. So if you have a look at these other scalars, you'll see these fields are exactly the same because it's just the declaration of the structure of the template. This is what changes between each scalar. So, good. I'll just then go back here to the template. The thing is that for a pure data structure, you only need the declaration of the template. What I just did now was to delete all the objects that draw that image graphically. The information is still there. If I do undo, the information isn't gone anywhere. It's still there. So this is the abstract part that confuses some PD users usually. What I did now was to delete these 4 objects, which are making the fields visible, which is the draw number object that I assume you guessed what it does. It draws the number. The draw symbol and the draw text. And the draw polygon, which is the black square rectangle around it. So this here you can see also 2 parts of the elements. So one part is just the template decoration, which is of course essential. Without it, you can't work it. But a separate part is the graphical representation. You can also decide yourself if you want to have one or how you have one. You don't have to do any graphical representation. The information is there anyway. So I'm also not going to go into all the possibilities of all these objects. For that, you can have a look then in the help files of each one. I'll just explain very shortly what the parameters are being used. So for each one of these, they work similarly. These three here, they work very similarly. You just declare first the variable that you are drawing, in this case the float f here. These are then the coordinates, x and y. This is the color. If I change it to 900, it will be red. If I change it to 0, it will be black. Later we can go through the color scheme. It's a bit strange. And afterwards there's a label, which can be anything or nothing at all, really. So you can add something, just it's really just for the user's convenience. The inlet, what all the inlets do, it's just to activate or deactivate. So the preset state is active, so they're visible, and like this, they're invisible. So that's also one thing you can also decide to control yourself. There's also a couple of other values, like assign a variable for hide and show, and a couple of other things, but these ones are not going to go into now. And the throw polygon has a similar kind of, well, it's slightly different, actually. So the first, if I remember correctly, the first parameter is a color. The second is the line thickness. And then afterwards, it's just pairs of coordinates. 0, 0, 120, 0, so right corner. 120, 55 is the bottom corner. And then it just goes back to the previous one. For example, if I delete here one of these, it will be a triangle afterwards. I just deleted one of the points from the draw polygon. And of course, if I change the line thickness, it will look a bit slightly different, or the color. Good. Okay. So I'll just go back now to the programming part of it. There's a section. Good. One reason why it's good to have the at least the drawing patch separated from the others is that when you're working with data structures, basically you're creating scalars, which are objects, data storage objects, and at some point you're done with it and you have to create new ones. And the advantage of having a subpatch only for it is that you can use the clear message then to, sorry, I renamed the patch. Have to rename it back to graphic one. And here again as well. You can send a message just to clean it. Now you have a blank slate and you can begin again to add elements to your patch. To your canvas. There is also another way to create scalars, which is for programmers a bit faster, which is explained here at the bottom. You can send messages to the canvas directly, where you just say scalar, the name of the template, and then all the elements you want to declare. It's basically the same. So basically, it replaces the append pointer and the append combination. So for example, if I send here now, this expression object is just multiplying the numbers. So if I send out here 10, oh, what happened? Oh yeah, it's a bit in the bottom. I should send a lower value. Okay. So this is, for example, let me say I wanted to create now 20 scalars at once. I could just do yeah. So this is just okay. Oh, I did something wrong. I sent the bank to an until instead of sending it a number. Now I have to close PD. This is really a beginner mistake. Just a second. Good. I just wanted to create 20 scalars at once. And I shut down the program instead. Good, but I think it's clear now for the first steps. I'm just going to add a couple of scalars now, because then you can go to the next step, which would be has some other elements to it. So if you want, create a couple of scalars in your patch. Doesn't matter how many. It's just they'll be important. Leave this patch open and open the next chapter, which is editing my first structure. So these two chapters work together. So the what it's going to happen is that this second chapter is going to edit the information that the scalars that are here on this canvas on the first one. So good. So there are two ways to edit the information. One is either directly by pointing and clicking and editing. And the other is by having everything automatized and your patch does it for you, which is might be a bit more interesting in the long run. So here is a kind of a description of the edit modes that you can find. If you are in a run mode, so you're not editing but your patch is locked, you can it works a bit differently for what type of elements you have. For example, for floats, you can drag them like this. It's basically like a slider. Of course, for symbols, you can do that, because there's no you don't know what comes after symbol. There's not a scale. One thing is that this is limited to integer numbers, positive and negative, but you can't have floats. If you press Shift, nothing will happen here. What you can also do is that when you click on them, you can also type a number, but you can't use commas. So, and you can't use the minus symbol. So yeah, this is a bit limited here and a bit contradictory. Again, it's some features that are there, but might not be useful for all cases. This case here, I can't show it now, but maybe later it will be possible. Later it will be possible to see this this case here, is that, as you've seen, this is defined by a variable, so and can be changed anytime, just like the symbol and the list. The same can be said of also the geometric shapes. The thing is that here they were defined by fixed pairs. You have the fixed coordinates here. Later we'll see some examples where the coordinates are not fixed. They're also themselves defined by variables, and they can be also edited by mouse dragging, just like this one. But if you're in, that's when you're in run mode. If you're in edit mode, you can now either select scalars, and then you can delete, copy, or move them. So you can just do Control D or delete them if you want. You can also select them all and copy again. That's just like normal patching. And what if we've already seen before, you can always go to the properties window and see the contents there. Good. Now, if you just go back to the previous patch and to the structure where the template is declared, you see here was the struct where the template is declared, and here you see the outlet is sending something to this variable here. What does is that, and this one is this one here. This is a way of having interaction possible with the patch, which means that I'm going to maybe make them show. Things that, according to the what you're doing with the patch, it's possible to, what you're doing as a user, it's possible, there are some interaction modes which are coded. For example, if I click it, this the struct object will send this message, which is a click, and then the pointer reference for this scalar. And then in this case, it sends a number, which is the epsilon coordinate. If I change something, it will change. It will send the change tag with the pointer reference. The pointer reference is also very important because you always need to know which scalar you're editing. That's the only way you can have a reference for to it. And these are the two run mode. In edit mode, there are a couple of different ones, which is the select and deselect, or also the displace. where it has the pointer and the movement, X movement for this place. So actually, yeah, if I move it up or down, it's zero. Why it's only X here and why it's only Y there, I think that was a choice, a coding choice, might not be the one that is always relevant, but anyway, if you might need those displacement values, you can always try to calculate them by getting the pointer. So it's so this is also a bit connected to what I said at the beginning. This whole part of pure data is a bit doesn't always doesn't have all the features that you might want to, and that makes the user have much more work when you he or she wants to program something. Good. Just a second. So when you get here the scalar editing, when you get here the scalar reference, you can then use unpack just to get out of all the get the tags you want, and then in the end you'll get the pointer reference, which then you can use later to edit the data, which is what is going to happen now in the other part of this patch. Good. Let's see. Just a second. Okay. Good. So this is an one way to get the information that is stored in the scalars. So for that you need first of all the pointer object to get the scalar references. And you need the same command that already used was used before, traverse, and the name of the canvas. After that, you need the next message. So before we use the bang, which was just to get you to the beginning of the list when you want to create new scalars, but if you want to access the scalars that are already there, you must use then the next message, which then will just basically go through all the scalars. So for example, if you click there, you'll see there here that now the pointer is being sent here and is being received here. You see that the values have arrived here now. And if I keep pressing the next message, it will then send the values of the other pointers that are in between have been stored in the canvas. Until eventually it will run out of pointers and you'll receive a bang here. And then nothing else will happen. Although something is happening, yeah, of course, something is happening because I've made a loop here. So now it's going through the beginning of the list again. Until it's going to come out the bang, probably now, or now, yeah. And since there is a loop here, it just went to the beginning of the list once more. You can also use the rewind message, which sends you to the beginning of the list again. By the way, in this case, list is a... is an imaginary list of all these scalar references here. It's not a list that is stored somewhere. So this is also, again, going back to the abstract part of this library, which is really doesn't fit with the data flow programming paradigm. Good. There's also another option, which is valid only if you're selecting objects, which is the vnext. Just a second. Which theoretically goes only through the selected objects. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's now going only through four objects and then going going back again. Good. One other feature that was added some versions ago is that I think you know the vis command probably, where you can, for example, where you can open and close windows. I'm just going to add something to it. Yeah, it works better if it's connected. The same thing can be done also using the pointer object, which then, in case you have a pointer somewhere, then it using this, it opens the canvas where this pointer is being drawn. So you don't have to do an extra circuit just to open the canvas in case you want to see it. you can just, if you have a pointer reference, you can just send this command and you'll see the canvas where it's being stored. So, and this was programmed some versions ago, I think. I don't know exactly when it was added. Good, but now this was related to accessing the information. Now to change the information, you can use the set of, so to access information, first we need to the pointer reference, which was already covered. And then when you have the pointer reference, which is being sent here, you need then to get it using the get object. And for that you also need, this is also a bit cumbersome, because you always, when you use a get, you also need to declare all the fields. So you need to declare the structure name and the variables you want to get. For example, now we're only working with one template called struct one. If I would have different templates here, I would have to get a different get object for each one of them. I couldn't use now a get object for another template. There would be an error here. So this is also a bit annoying, because for example, X and Y fields are common to all scalars, all templates. But if I have a three or four different templates here, I'll have to duplicate this structure here just to get information. It could have been done maybe a bit more efficiently for the user. So if I then go back here to traverse and go through the pointers, you'll get information. And the pointer reference is now being also sent to the set object, which is now here going to the right side. And on the other ones are the three fields that are here declared. And now here I can set the values. So now I'm changing the X value. And since there was no number declared here in either Y or F, they've turned to zero. So now this scalar is above. So this works as a normal object. The left inlet is hot and the other ones are cold. And you can either send one value at a time and then send something to the left object, or you can send a list. And it will set the values for that object. And then if you want to do it to the next scalar, you just go to the next, and then now the pointer reference is there, and if you send something, it will change it. Good. You might have noticed that I didn't only change numbers so far, because symbols don't work in the same way. So also when I created these scalars, I didn't declare the symbols or the list, because for some internal reason, it's not possible to declare them on creation time, just as the other ones. So if I wanted to change the symbol of a scalar, first, I would have to create that scalar, then get the pointer reference, and then change the symbol using the set minus symbol and structure name and symbol. So now that there is a pointer reference here, I can change this symbol here, which was for this object, for this scalar here. So this is also another thing which is a bit more cumbersome. Just because there's a symbol there, I can't use it the same way as I declare the float. That's also a bit an extra step, a step which doesn't really help things. But I don't know if it's going to change in the near future anyway. Good. No, not really, because you can send any other numbers on the creation time. Like this F, this number here, the float, they were sent on creation time. So it's some other internal reason, yeah. I think. Okay. Yeah.
But it does have an initial value constant.
No, that's only the label. Right, I'll go back to the structure. That's only the label that was added here in the draw symbol object. I can remove it. And now
that
symbol. Yes. It does, because that's the default value for symbol. Just like the default number for float is zero. So float is symbol is the zero version of a symbol. But the lists are a relatively new feature. lists, which are called texts. They are mentioned here. They're a relatively new feature. They weren't there, I think, maybe on 0.45 or something. For example, if you go to PD Extended, which has died some years ago, they weren't there yet. So this is a relatively new feature that was added from Phuket. I think it works in Pearl Data. I don't know if you can check that. You there? I don't remember now if text is the text object is already working in Pearl Data. Yes, you can, yeah. But I was mentioning also because of the declaration of the variable here is also called text. Kind of, I guess. There's also a text file or a text object, no, text file object in PD anyway, which also has the similar functionality. Let's see, no, good. Okay, yeah, so that was how to then, after creating some scalars, you can edit, do a basic control editing and accessing and editing. So, but as you've seen already, this is a bit more work than the normal PD patching. Just comparing this with declaring a variable and do a send and receive, it's slightly different. Of course, the possibilities later are a bit more interesting as well. If there aren't any questions, we can go to the next element, which is then the graphical elements. So there are, as you've already seen, there are different types of graphical elements. Some are used to draw variables, floats, symbols, or lists. And others are pure graphical shapes. So if you open now the graphical elements section, you'll see three. Here I have three different templates, which are these ones here. You can open the graphic tool canvas and you see here how they look. So you have a staff, which is here, five line staff. We have a polygon here, and we have circles. It's called circles because when I click on it, you see a circle opening and then disappearing. I'm reaching for the quadrature of the circle here, but it doesn't really work. But you can see then the details how they have been done here in this part. So here in the left side is the template for all these three templates. And here on the right side is just ways of editing and doing some work to them. So the staff might be the simplest one, where you have you declare, use the structure object to declare a structure called staff. You declare here the floats f and x and y as usual, and then I choose three other variables, which is left, right, and thickness. So, and then you see here five different draw polygon objects, which is one for each line of the staff. If I delete one of them, you see now the middle line disappears. And you see here, so the first one is the color. I can now, for example, turn this one into red, the top line into red. Oh, sorry, the bottom line into red. But the second, the thickness is defined by a variable and not by by a number. And also the other ones. So then we have pairs of that define coordinates. And the x value of these two pairs are defined also by variables. the epsilon coordinate, coordinate is fixed because it's an horizontal line. If you go here now to the step control, so which is just the control patch for the step scalar. You'll see here, I think I didn't put, did I put? Oh yeah, I did, okay, good. You see also here the, there's also a step reference, so I think that when I click here, yeah, exactly. So when you click on the step scalar, you'll see the values appear here. Because the pointer is going here from the struct object here to the get object. And so here I'm getting the x, epsilon, left and right and thickness elements. And they're connected afterwards to a set object, which also receives the same pointer. So now that I have the pointer reference and I have the values here, I can, for example, now set the thickness of the lines. By changing the last field, of course, yeah, one thing is that the minimum thickness is one. Anything you do under one will be ignored. And of course, I can now also change the left and, sorry, right and left numbers. Just one interesting thing, I'm going to see if I can. And then I can also change the x and epsilon coordinates. Notice that in this case, the x and epsilon coordinates don't necessarily match the beginning of the lines, because these lines are defined by the number here, defined here. So that means that in this case, the object, I'm going to place now the object at 0 and 200. So 0x and 200 epsilon. I'll just put it at 400 so that, oh no, sorry, at 50, so that it's a bit lower. But you see, this object is now placed at 0, which is really here on the left side of the window. But the line only begins here afterwards because of this value here. If I set this offset to 0, then the line will start also at the same time, at the same place where the scalar is scaled. So the graphical representation doesn't match the doesn't have to match the position of the scalar. One thing is what you see, another thing is what you get. Or what you have. Good. And as I said before, if for fields that are defined by variables, you can also control them with the mouse. So now I can here, you see that the mouse pointer changes shape when I go here to one of the ends. And since there's a variable controlling this value, I can change it now with the mouse as well. The same for the other side. If these would be fixed values, I couldn't do that. So, because as I can't now change the epsilon value, because it has been declared as a fixed element. So here, all these, the left side is always declared by left, and the right side is declared, and the epsilon is always a fixed value. I think I can't also, I can't change the thickness like this, because there is not a point to grab for the thickness. So if I want to change the thickness, I would have to do it like this. Good. And of course, you can also automatize all these kinds of changes. You don't need to go get there with the mouse. What you need is just the reference to the scalar, so that you can then change the values. If you go now to the polygon, which is this triangle here, you'll see, so it's the same idea, struct object, variable, a template called field pole. Just a second, by the way, you can also have a look at the properties of the step element. Then you'll see here it's the same principle. The first stop, it's just the declaration of the data structure. These two lines are always the same, template stuff, and then all the variables. And then here you have the object stuff and all the variables that are there. Good. Now for the field polygon, it's also the basically the same idea. This polygons is then just a group of coordinates that you can always add to it. There's no limit for it. You can do anything with more than two coordinate groups. So we have here x and epsilon. Then you have one for color out, one for color in and one for thickness. One thing is that you can do something, if you move around with the mouse, you notice that here this top corner changes the mouse pointer, which it means that there's some you can do something with it. And also this right one here. That means that I can click it and grab it. And see, when I do that, the color of the outside changes. And if I push it, if I drag it up and down, the color of the inside changes. And you might also notice that there's a limit here. I can now continue with the mouse going up or going down, and the shape itself doesn't go over certain limits. And the same here on this side. This is defined then here in this object. So it's a filled polygon object, which creates a polygon with a filling inside. It has the, as usual, has, so it has the first two parameters are the colors outside and inside, which were defined by the variables color out and color in. Then the thickness of the outside. And then afterwards it's just, as for all polygons, it's just groups of coordinates, 0, 0, 0, color out. I'm going to explain what is this thing in parentheses right afterwards. And then color in and 50. So it means it has the first point is this one here, 0, 0. The other one is x, 0, and height defined by color out. So it's the same variable used by the color of the outside. Sorry, I knew that I had a mistake here. So it should be color in instead of color out. By the way, I'm going to change this. I knew I had a mistake here from the previous workshop and I forgot about it. No, I'm going to leave this as it was. Okay. So when I change the height, the color in the inside changed because they are sharing the same variable. And when I change the right point, it changes the outside because they're also sharing the same variable. Now, this also introduces this possibility here, these values between parentheses, which then they're explained here. So after any variable that you declare on a graphical object, you can have up to three groups of values in parentheses. The first one limits the variable's values. So that means that this color out variable will only be allowed between 0 and 200. So if I change this here, it can only change between 0 and 200. If I change this now to 250, I can pull it a bit more up. And then there are also two other variables, which is then, so the next one variable has a 0 to 100 limit, but then has a scaling factor to it. That means that when I'm at 0 here, the real value will be 20, and when I'm at 100 here, the real value will be 200. So it's a kind of integrated scaling. And this also has a third possibility here, which is the step value, which is usually 1. Here is set to 10, which means that you might notice that this, when I drag this, it drags in big jumps, because the minimum step value is 10. For example, if I now change this to 20, the jumps will be even bigger. If I do it slowly, because that's a minimum that it allows the graphic to change. So this has a kind of, you could also do this limitation on other parts of the patch when you edit your data, but this is some possibilities for have some integrated limits on your scalers. There is one thing that could be better, but is not yet. There are two things, I think. Is that, first of all, you can't use any group without using the previous group, so you can't use group C and D without having used A and B. And another thing which actually I'm not finding any notice here, but I think it's also true, is that you can't use variables here for these fields, which would have been maybe interesting to use variables for the numbers here. But as far as I know, you can't do that, which is a bit of a pity, because then they're a bit fixed and they're not, you can't adjust them dynamically. Good. So these two objects already shown two different kinds of possibilities you might have, either with control of the mouse and then some other limitations that you can add to your graphical elements. This one has now another thing, which is a small interaction. Good. The object itself has is here in the circles. And it has, as usual, the floats x and y, and then two other floats, which are side 1 and side 2. So first of all, it has the square, which is here declared in this object. Everything is fixed. There are no variables here. You only see numbers. And then the circles. For that, I'm using the object draw curve. The first two parameters are just, as usual, the color and the thickness. And then after that, you just see groups of variables, which are the coordinates of the circles. So what happens is that when I click in this object, I'm going to put this a bit nearer. The pointer reference goes through here. And what it does is that it opens a metrum that then sums the values from 1 to 9 and sends them to set the variables side 1 and side 2, thus making the circle going from 0 to 50 plus 45. Yes? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does it output?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mentioned in the previous version. Okay. Yeah, that's what we went through here in editing my first structure. Yeah. So, yeah, basically I think it's everything summed up here. So if you're in run mode, you have these two options. The change when you change a value by dragging, or the click when you click on it. And then if you're in edit mode, these two things here. So what's happened is that when I click on it, I'm going then to put the print here to show it. What's happening when I click on it is that it's going to send a click, the G pointer, and then the X value. So the struct object outputs this list. I'm routing the click, so then from here I'm getting only the rest of it. And that's the pointer to that scalar, yes. So, and this pointer is going then here, which is then, I'm just sending it here first of all to the set object. And then here, these banks, they just activate the process where the animation is done. The X value gets lost in the process. It's not really relevant for it. Good. So, and also just one small detail, as PD users already know, if I do this now, I restart this object and I click here, now you see nothing. You probably already know why, because then the square is over the circles, so you can't see the circles anymore. Now you would have to restart the circle, the drawer object is going to draw the circles, so that all the circles are above, over the square. It's an old problem with the drawing order of PD objects. So that might also be important to consider in if you have several objects which are over each other, you can't really change the order of that. Good. Can I close this chapter now, or there's another detail as well. But was everything clear with this chapter so far, or clear enough anyway? Just a second. Good. So leave it open because there's now a sub-chapter to it, which is the canvas details. You can open it here. So this relates to the other part that I jumped before. One interesting thing is that you can edit everything in a canvas, all the scalars. Doesn't matter if you do it by hand or automatically. But one important thing is that you can save that information as a text file. I'm just going to check if there's one file there. Yeah, there's one there. Okay, good. So if you see in the folder, there's this file here, graphic2.txt, which is a previously recorded version of the content of that canvas, which has some elements from the T3 templates that were used. So if you press now here, read graphics2.txt, what happens is that the content of that canvas is going to be overwritten by whatever has been recorded previously. So you can use this to save scores, so to say, save and load scores, which is can be quite interesting. One thing is that some of you might have noticed already, if you go to the properties of the canvas, if you just click in the open space, you'll see these fields here that usually no one knows what to do with them. What happens is that these are the fields that govern the coordinates here. For example, if you might notice here, the standard value is usually 1 for x and minus 1 for epsilon. In this subpatch here, I change it to 1 for epsilon. Because since usually when doing a patch, you start from above and then you go downwards, the default order is minus 1. If I change this now to minus 1, the graphical representation is going to mirror vertically. And if, by the way, so these two elements have no effect in any other objects besides scalars, because they are going to define the scaling proportion for your graphics. And this you can choose, you can do a zoom effect by using here the Done Canvas Dialog option, and then by sending a value to it. In this case, it's affecting both X and Y values. But I could also, let me see, I think if I'm not wrong, I could also do this, and this will now only affect the X value. So the Y, the height, stays the same for the objects. And of course, I could also use a slider to change this. Problem is that I think you, Rafael, were mentioning yesterday about using data structures for GUI. Bad thing is that these are dependent on TCLTK. So as everything else, they can be a bit slow, especially if you're putting them also in a GOP and everything else. So if you want to have a fast rate for those, it might be good that you test them before you. I didn't do any tests, and since I don't really know the internals, I can't answer that.
In my case, is to kind of like override the C objects.
Well, it's definitely much more interesting to manage the data, but for the graphical representation in itself, that's where it can be a problem. So it would be better to test it, or maybe ask some person that really knows what's happening inside, if it's a good idea or not. I mean, no, not me, because I don't speak C. I only speak pure data. So. good. There's also one other interesting element, which is this sort command here. things that if you as you connecting to the drawing order, as we spoken here in the circles object, this is which you see here. For example, if you click somewhere, then you'll see that the drawing order is more important than what you really see. Yeah. It's possible for you for someone to create scalars in any order, doesn't matter what. But if you use the sort command, what it's going to do is that it's going to do going through this canvas and sort all the scalars through the x coordinate. So that in if in some case you're going to have we're going to see later an example from of a sequencer, you have something that needs the x order to read through the x order of the object, then it would be good that your scales are in order, because then, or if not, they will be read in whatever order they were created, which might not be helpful. So this sort, in some context, this sort command will be very important, so that you know what is happening. In case it might interest you, you can also just have a look at the contents of the graphic2 point text file. There you'll see also a similar structure. You'll see the declaration of the three templates, so the staff, the field polygon, and the circles. And then you'll see you'll have the two commas, and then here you have all the scalars that are in the canvas. And the format is always the same. You have the first name and then all the data that is in it. So you see here, actually here they are not sorted. You see here the first one value is the x value. So see the first here is -4, then it's 40, 251. I'm going to try something now and see, let's see. So to see if this works, I send the sort message again. Now I'm going to write a new file called graphic3, which is now there. Good. And now you see the objects are ordered according to the second value in the list, which is the x value. So it works. So under certain context, this is a very important command. Good. In that case, we can go back, close this chapter. I'm just going to go back very fast to the chapter that I jumped before, which was this here, control the painting subpatch. So to control the, as you've seen already, controlling the x, y coordinates values is going to change the display of your scalars radically. It would be good then to have a knowledge of these commands here, which probably most of you already know, which is the open and close, the clear, the dirty, so that you have the patch dirty or not, so that, for example, when you change something in your patch, it's now dirty, it has this thing here. If I would send then this message, I think this is not the graphic, let's see, yeah, now it's not dirty anymore. So we won't have something ask you, if I close this window, it won't ask to save it. And these are the two objects that change the GOP parameters. So Dan Kovas dialog has more options than cohorts. The disadvantages is that, well, not necessarily a disadvantage, but a feature, is that DunCanvas dialog makes your patch dirty and Quartz doesn't. So if you're using DunCanvas dialog and you don't want to be annoyed, you should then do something like this, usually. Always send a dirty zero message afterwards. So that, because the patch hasn't really changed, it's only the PD things that it has. Okay, so this section will be important when you when you're doing your GOP coordination and etc. Good. Okay. Then in that case, if no one has nothing against it, we can go to our first array. Mm-hmm. So arrays. Are not that, not really different from other elements. The only thing is that an array is basically a group of elements, and to draw that group of elements, you need one basic element to draw each of the elements that is inside of an array. That means that to draw an array, you have here the, here is the template called array one. You have the x and y fields. And then you have here the array command, which declares an array, which is called array s. But you need a second element, which is called element, in this case, which is an other template, which is will be then the individual element of each array. I'm just going maybe to open the graphic and it will be a bit more clear. I'm going to create a new array here. It is there now. So here we have an array. It was just created using this command. It sent the pointer and append message to the patch, and it got the pointer reference immediately and set the size to 10. Of that array. If I change this to 20, for example, and I wait just a second. Oh, why is this not working? Just a second. This is weird. It's not. I can select it now for some reason. I'm just going to clean the window. Good. Now I'm going to create one with 20 points the size. Yeah, I think there was a bug already. I might have to restart PD. This is one of the disadvantages that I'm also going to speak later. Yeah. Now I try to do something and nothing happens. And I think if I close the window and open it again, you see the difference. So this is one of the bugs that can happen when working with data structures. So I'm going to close this now again and open it. So this is, there will be at the end a section with advantages and disadvantages. And this is one of them, that some points this can happen and then the GUI is not responsive anymore. And then you just have to restart PD. Good, but I'm going now to put, to add a graphic here. So when you create an array, of course, everything is at zero. So as I was saying before, so the difference is that you have an array, but you have one template for the array itself, but you need one template for the element, which in this case is this first template here, which is declaring the struct called element. It's declaring only the floats y and w. So because what happens is that in this array, I can only move upwards in this case. But there's also another thing. So I'd already told about x and y, which are predefined in PD, but also the w is predefined, which is the width. So that means when you're near one of these points, you see either the mouse inverts the side, or then if you go a bit lower, you'll see this arrow up and down, which means that there's a W field here that you can edit and has a graphical representation corresponding to the width. So if you want to use something like this, it's predefined in PD. You can't change it anyway. If you want something like this, you have to use it also as a W. You can't use any other name because it won't understand. And you see also here the two other objects which are there, which is a draw number, which is showing the current y numbers. By the way, I think I can also... no, maybe I can't. Okay, no, I can't. I thought I could change the number by writing on it, but I can't in this case. And a field polygon, which is just the red squares. I can also hide them. They're not really necessary. So this is the template for each one of the, for the basic element inside an array. And then the template of the array itself, what it does is that it declares an array called array s using the element template. And the rest is just a float for the distance and a float for the line. So the distance float, the distance variable is here 30. And it's basically the distance between the points, which I can change here. And the line, this black line is just a line that is going from beginning to the end. But the thing is that only to draw a line, I have to do all this because it has to calculate how long is the distance and how many points are there. So it has to do all these sums just to make a line that goes until the end of the array. So just for something this simple, you need this whole part here. Also, one important thing is that, as before, you only see the array if you have an object showing it, which is done by the plot object. You see it here in the template, array template section. So you have the array S, which is the name of the array that is being plotted, and then all the values, which I don't remember now what they do exactly. I think this was the line thickness. I think this is the line thickness, but it's being overruled by the W. And here the distance at the end. Of course, you can then have a look at what each field means in the help file. Good. Let's see. Well, and then to get information from the array is where things begin to get a bit. By the way, of course, you can always change the size of your array. You just need to have the pointer to it and the set size object, as it is done here. You know, let's change it. Of course, if you add new elements, they'll be zero. If you delete elements and edit again, they'll be zero, of course. So if you want some more content, you have to draw it yourself. And then to get individual elements from that array, for that you can see this here in the element search section. So I have here a radio button, which is, by the way, being adjusted automatically to the array size. All right, I'll just show this. Might be a bit more clear. So things that now to get the access to that, I have to first to choose an element that I want to access, and then I'll see here the value. In this case, both epsilon and w. All the w's are at zero. I'm going just to change something now. Good. So you see things start to get a bit complicated when you want to access the information. You have to add more and more steps. Yes?
Is the element in the object the element to get just required to be the same, or is that just a coincidence?
That's a coincidence. Maybe I should have used a different name than element. So this object here called element is what gets then the information from a specific patch name. And here you have, and to declare it, you have first of all the template name, which is array one, and then the array number, array name called on it. So you see, to get the information from one element in an array, you have to have the scalar reference to that array. Then you have to use the element object. And then you have to say the element number. And of course, for that, you somehow have to know how many number of elements are in an array, because if you ask a bigger number than what there is, you'll get only zero. Or you will get the value of the last one. Just a second. If you go over the array size, you'll just get the value of the last element, just like in a normal array anyway. Good. And of course, you can also set it afterwards, as long as you have the reference. So this element object also sends a pointer reference. So if the point is there, then you can use the set element object. The set object with the pointer for the element anyway. So now that the pointer reference is there, I can set this like this as well. Good. And if you think that things are complicated now, let's see arrays inside arrays. So you can see that in the next chapter. Let's see, what time is it? Okay. Good. We're almost done. Here, what happens is that you have, first of all, an array, which is declared here. And the thing is that the element for that array is not an element in itself, but it's another array, which is also declared here. And of course, since that's an array, it needs an element inside that array. So you have now three layers of content there. Let me see. Good. So we have what we have here now. The main array is in green lines, and then you see that inside each point there's the possibility to have another array. So each point has a different number of size of different number of elements here. So you have first one array with one element, one with five elements, one with 13 or something, I guess, and some others more. So let's just see here. I guess we have to do it in Gem in that case. Or you just have to get some, or you have to figure out all the math for it yourself. So, and the thing is that since everything is encapsulated, you can also get the references to it. So now I'm accessing the main array, which has 10 elements from 0 to 9. And we see now here in this, first of all, it says what is the epsilon value. This is something else. So and then it accesses the element inside, which is itself an array, if you remember. I'm just going to put this. It's important to show this part as well. So if I access the first element of the main array, you see that it only has one element in it. If I access the second, it has five, and this radio button is updating automatically. If I want to see what's inside each one of these, then I have to click here. And then if I go now to the next one, which would be the bigger one, I can now access all the other ones. And I imagine, of course, it will be possible to add other levels to it anyway. One thing is that apparently you can't change here anything graphically outside of the main array. So I can change this value here graphically, or I can draw them like this. But I can't change anything of these. Or actually, yeah, I can change the W, but I can't change the epsilon.
Can you still open a separate graphical editor for the arrays
within this array? You could. I mean, they're also here now. They're this bottom part. I can change them there. For example, I'm going to access now the first one. And since everything is there, I'm going to access the first. And since there everything is connected to the set element, I can change it now. Anyway, so I'm going to access now the big one here. Here.
But I think what he's asking is if you can have another subpatch to grab
that.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, sorry. You mean to have it, to have it another patch where you can edit it. Yeah, you could. I didn't try that yet, but I'm sure you can. You just need the scalar reference, and then you need. Mm-hmm. I think now in practical terms, you would have to grab that information and then create a new scalar with it, which you then edit, and then when finish editing, that will save into this one. Yeah, exactly. So you have to double the information. Either you do that so that it's done dynamically, or you just do it in a fixed way that then when you add new points to the main array, it just adds new windows, and then you have all the arrays there. But then you have to search for the right window, which will be a bit more work. Good. I'm going now to... And these are the last objects are to add it only in PTE 048, at least the array objects, I think, which are a bit more, which start to get a bit more interesting, because as I said before, this area of pure data is very underdeveloped compared to any other ones, and any development is dependent basically on Miller Packet's work. Hello. So In the last versions, he added these two multi-use objects which can access both arrays and text elements. Let's see, we have here an element. Maybe I'll have a look at the lists first, which is a bit more simple, I guess. Yeah. So here you have a patch, you have your template if you want to have a look at it. And here you have a, in the text scaler subpatch, you have a patch with four scalers. You can notice them by seeing the square, the green square, and then on the right side you have some text or a group of lists which with a different number of lines. So if you want to, I've put the examples here for all the operations that you can do. What you need to do is just to click in any of the scalers and it will send the scalar reference to any of these objects. So for example, now I have to show the PDWin, the console. I've clicked on the top one. Now if I send here the zero, I get the content out of the first line and then second line and third line. And then you can also use the other fields to define the starting number and the number of fields. This is potentially very interesting because before you couldn't really save lists. You could save lots of variables after each other, but now by being able to save lists, you can have a bit more interesting work. And of course, you can do the same with the set. So now I just changed the content of the top lists. Wait, I'm going to change it again. Remove the last word. So you can do the same as well. You could do this already before in any or other form, but you have to build yourself all the framework for this. This makes it much easier now to store groups of elements. Good. You can insert text. You can delete text. You can see the size, see or set the size. You can get the size either for the whole object or for each line by sending the line number. You can also get all the information in the help file, but this is a kind of a resume from it. I think most of the features are here. Good. You can get all the contents as a list so that you can save it afterwards. And then you can search text even. I'm not going to go through this now anyway. Or you can even sequence it, which is something. I think you have to choose the bottom one. Now I remember what was the problem. Yeah, you can sequence text using just something similar to the text sequencer object. The problem is that, one thing I have to say first, this is done using the text object, which is actually more for text blocks, but it has an option to access scalars as well by using the minus S flag and then the scalar template name. The thing is that this sequencer option doesn't work when using that. I think it doesn't allow to have both minus S and minus W flags, which is necessary for the automatic sequencing. So this isn't working that well for this yet. Now let's just have a quick look at the arrays, because I wanted to have a look at some example patches with real life cases anyway. Let's see. Yeah, these are the templates. Okay, here's just a couple of arrays that I've done, just very simple ones where you only have an epsilon field. So you can get or set the size of an array. Of course, I already clicked on one, so the pointer reference is there. I can just now change something. I can now, of course, set the size, add some elements, or remove them. So individual elements as well. Now I just got the list of all the elements. You could have done this already before by programming everything yourself, but now at least there's something extra there to help you with these things. This is a big development, actually. You can also just write the elements yourself by sending a list. To do this before, which is done now with a click, I'll have to do the list, get the scalar from the array, go through each element, and send each element to write it. So now it's a bit more convenient. You can make a sum of the elements. You can get maximum and minimum, and quantile and random. I think these are very specific functions, but I guess he imagined it was important. And also do something that... And you can do that either all these operations for the whole array or then for a specific field. For example, you can read in more detail the explanations afterwards. What I'm doing now is just to create append a scalar which has an array in it. One thing I didn't explain before. In the previous arrays, there was no variable x that was declared. In this array, there is a variable x which has been declared. And what that does is that it overrides the distance command, so that when you create a new array, there is no concept of one point after the other, because each element has also an x in itself. So as you see in these arrays here, the x, not only the y and the w, but the x can also be anywhere. So you can also grab these points and move them anywhere. It doesn't have to go from left to right. And that is possible because the element of the template has the float x declared. Good. And just going back to here, what was happening is that here I'm just creating with random values different arrays, and then I'm using the array object with the minus f flag so that I write these values into one of these fields. So I'm writing the fields for x, y, and w. So I'm just creating some random stuff there according to some limits. So which everything was possible to do before, but much more laborious. Good, I'm going to try now to go very fast to these things here. Yeah. I guess so, yes. Since this is all vanilla, I think so, yes. I don't have any experience with libpd or other platforms. So this is a small resume of the disadvantages and maybe some workarounds when using data structures. Some bugs you'll find for sure when working with them. So yeah. As with anything that is related to the CLTK, it has to be logged off when you close a patch. So if you have a patch, I have a patch with 33,000 scalars, which I cannot open in my laptop because it will stay on 100% CPU until I close it. When I close a patch and there are lots of scalars there, a PD patch, not the canvas, it will take lots of time to log off all these objects. So if you are closing a patch, it might be better to close all the sub-patches that have scalars on them. That's one way. So these are all just workarounds on how to get a better user experience from it. When you are creating a patch, for sure you're going to change your templates, you're going to add variables, remove variables, etc., change names. If you have many scalars already there, it might happen that they get corrupted because of memory conflicts or something. So be sure to save often. Close the drawing window when you change your template. I don't know if it was clear when I've done it, but when you change something in the template or in the graphics, it changes automatically. So if you have a window with lots of scalars, it will change them all. One bad thing is that you can't use $0 variables because when you create the scalars, the four number digit of the $0 will be saved with it. So What I usually, when I have dynamic sellers, is to create them on load bank, as in the Bezier object from my library. So, yeah, this relating to GUI objects, intensive patches will be slow, so might be better not to use it or try to use another method to display your data. And there are very few operations that are available. Basically, you can set the data and get it. Everything else in between, you have to do it yourself. Except for these two objects now with text and array that I just shown. One very, very good library is the FTM library for Max, but unfortunately, it's not possible to do that in PD. I already asked several people many times, but even if it's being a free library, open source library, it's not possible for technical reasons to use it in PD. Good. So, yeah, so concluding. Yeah, it's a very hard at first to work with this, because you have to add up to all these steps in between of setting and getting your data, preparing your templates, etc. But then after a while, as usual with everything else in PD related or code related, you get proficient. Something that might be interesting, it's, I think someone was programmed some abstractions that kind of regular that had some normal operations, like some things that you always have to do, but I think there is not really that many code there using data structures. It's still a kind of exotic part. Good. You can see other resources that you can find. These tutorials are basically what I use myself to create this tutorial. If you want, you can have a look at some. There's not that much time left, but if you want, we can have a look at some real life cases of some patches. I can show very fast. For example, yeah, most of them are in my own library. For example, the. Let's see. I have to write this. I said before that the color scheme is a bit particular. There's a reason for it, but I don't remember now what it is. But with this object here, you have all the colors in the data structures. They go from 0 to 999. Afterwards, it just repeat these two lines here. And you can use this also in an exercise. For example, if I change this here, this variable is the same as the color number. So if I change this variable, I'll also change the color. For example, this is you can have a look at it yourself later. It's just a patch that just clears the canvas and then creates all these scalars automatically, dynamically. Sorry, wait, I'm going to open it again. Inside there's each scalar is just a scalar. By the way, using the $0 name for the template, and then the fields from X, Y, farba, color, and position. Let's see. Yeah, I think I mentioned the Bezier object, which is basically just a Bezier transform function. I'm going to open the help file. It's a very simple object. Huh. Yeah, for some reason it's not going upwards, this button. Yeah, so that if I send, let's see, where was this? Yeah, if I send a line here, it will come out modulated by the function here. Let's see. Yeah, I think you mentioned yesterday the matrix control object, which also uses. I can show it. Yeah. This is basically just to simulate Max's matrix control. If you connect it to a matrix multiple, it will have the same functions. Let's see. Okay. There are a couple of two other ones which is not as complex as your preset system. But it's just a very simple kind of menus. First of all, you can have a kind of drop-down menu simulated with data structures that you can also control like this. You can have a look at the details later. Or a similar principle, but for to store presets. Very simple ones in this case. By the way, this is a content that is going out when I choose one of the presets. Let's see. Yeah, you can see it here in the... you can see all this in the GMMP library. Anyway, good. Yeah, for the... Yeah, I'll have a look at the leap motion. I have one here, but it's not really necessary for me to open it. I'll just insert. Yeah, there may be two patches that I can show until the time runs out. So I'm trying to learn a bit to work with the leap motion. And for you who know it, there's lots of data there. So what I'm doing is that I did this patch that saves all the data. And since some of the groups of elements have from 1 to 3 dimensions, what was it? I'm going to load the preset now that I saved previously. Was that to do an object that has 3 arrays in one, up to 3 arrays in one. At some point, I'll do a general purpose object of this, of any of the of these objects anyway. For now. No, this is directly from the leap motion, using the leap motion object. So I could have do it now, but we're a bit running low on time. But anyway, I have the I would have received the data from the leap motion here, and then it would save here, and then I could play it back. And I also did a gem simulation of it, because I'm basically in the process of saving data and analyzing it. Now I'm trying to detect gestures and other things as well. So first, and I can also have a look at this here. So at some point, I'll grab one of these objects here, which is basically a multi-dimensional array, and make a general base abstraction so that people can use it. For now, it's only it's there only for this purpose. I'm going to maybe to show something that might be interesting. It's a case where I use, since I have the sound turned on, I should use this. It's a case where I use data structures for two different. So this was a performance where I used the voice recordings of a friend that is an accordionist. And we recorded the samples of her. Each sample is in one of these objects here. I don't see the selection, but it's here. And what I did was to separate all the words, so that, and then first use data structures to create all these markers here. So, for example, if I go select the number here. So you see also the, this is just a simple playback. It only plays the excerpt that is there written. All the information is written on lists, so then I can update it anytime. I could also click it here, but when I click it, then it creates, it also changes the array, so that's not a very good idea anyway. So this is one level of that I use data structures it to manage all the information of each sample. You have here 6 recordings. And the other way I use it was to control it on performing. So what I did was to, in that performance, it was the idea was to separate each word and, first of all, split it into grammatically. So you have nouns, verbs, adverbs, etc. And that is represented by each color. And then here, what it does is that it reads this this information here and does the representation in time as matching to the arrays here. So you see, first it does a green word and a red word and a green word. I forgot now what green and red means. So then, and based on the mouse coordinates, I could then make it play here by moving my mouse here. I could then also switch on and off any of the types of words that I wanted to. Just to control the density of the words. Anyway. So the audio itself is very simple. It's basically just playing that excerpt of the sound. Good. Here are also some other references of other patches that you know. One that is very well known for PD people is the Solitudes patch from Hans Christoph Steiner. By the way, no, I'm just going to open another example, which actually may be relevant. I have more complex examples myself, but I can't. They were part of other patches, which would have been a bit complicated for me to isolate. This is the example from Miller, which is a sequencer. What it does is that it has this canvas with these scalars here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And based on the color, it uses a different synthesizer for them. So for example, if I turn this on, it's going to play this score horizontally. Yeah, so you see the black is the dynamics, the height is the pitch. Now what I can do is to change this. And play back again. Yeah. And of course I could also change the content itself. Let's see. Okay, now I don't recall exactly what everyone does, but every time then it reads, it just reads the information and it changes again. Okay. So I have some other patches which are much more complex, but I can't show them. What I can maybe show is that just some pictures for something. If I can find it, wait just a second. Yeah, here. No. Ah, here. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I have a project that I've been working on for a couple of years that I don't know if it's ever going to be finished. And just a second. Just going to look for it. What I mentioned before. So, for example, this is the. This is only the score of it, so that subpatch with the scalar data. It has 39,000 lines of code, and it has around, so this is a saving of the Goldberg variations. It has 33,548 notes in it. It has also many more scalars, which are then for other elements, such as that the movement name, time signature, tempo, bar number, beat, etc. I can, as I said, I can't open this here because the computer will just collapse. But what I can do it just to show how it looks by opening, for example, this is how it looks, the complete piece. I don't have a better zoom level. This is a complete piece from beginning to end, and these are some of the excerpts of it. So, for example, the first variation looks like this. Basically, it's a MIDI roll that I implemented, so which is reading from a Sibelius file where I have the complete piece in several layers on voices and also other data in other layers, and it exports into a MIDI file, and then it reads it into PD and creates all these scalars that then is going to read afterwards to play it afterwards and play in different layers and etc. and different things. So this is excerpts from it. Let's see, there will be also, sooner or later there will come an example with some, you're only seeing the notes here, but sooner or later an example will come. Yeah, now you see an example here with also the some movement information, the piece number, the name, the bar structure, and then the bars and beats for each one of these elements. So this is the first half of the 28th variation, for example. You can here see the same thing, but without showing the beats, only showing the bars. But the notes are exactly the same. So, but unfortunately, I can't show anything else besides it. Good, and I think we're 2 minutes over time. But if you have any questions or something, I guess no one is going to throw us out, as far as I know. Yeah. Yeah, I can put it. It's not that high top secret anyway. And what the big difficulty for me when I started working on this was to get information and really understand it, because fortunately the vanilla patches are not that clear. You know? But the PD extended patches were much better, so that helped me a lot. And then also these tutorials that I mentioned here, they also helped a lot to understand the thing and then to build this tutorial myself. But hopefully things will get better then also in the future. But since data structures is basically dependent only on Miller's work, it's going to take a while. It's not that easy. Is what? Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, okay. Any other questions or requests? Or you had enough information already, probably. Okay. Apparently, yes. So you're free to go anyway. You don't have to say it. No? Okay. Sure. Thanks.